But tonight, I'm really appreciative of having Teresa Dantino return to our store. She is an author, a thinker, a cosmologist, and a great friend of many rivers, books and tea. And it's tonight she will be giving a talk, Transformations in Matter and Energy, Time and 2012. Thank you for coming to Many Rivers. Really appreciate
Thank
it.
Thank you for having me. Okay. I think we have the technology at the ready, hopefully.
Excuse me, Teresa. Mm-hmm. I've had requests from the back. Is it possible to raise the picture?
To raise it? I think so. It has a leg here.
How's that?
I think we
should
change
that.
Yeah,
no,
we
should
change
this.
Higher? Oh, okay. Yeah, it's good in the back.
We haven't yet learned how to
see.
Thank you.
Working
on it.
Yeah.
That lighting
up. I know. That's
yeah, that's great. I think it's good. Yeah. Okay, so everybody can see the screen. I want to thank Many Rivers for hosting me tonight. It's a great space in town, and I'm really, really grateful to have it here. And I want to thank all my good friends that I see in this room. I feel very supported, and I'm really thankful. I especially want to thank Melissa because she's been... we've been meeting for, gosh, I think over 2, maybe even 3 years now, and working on writing together. And this project emerged out of the writing that I've been trying to do for the past 3 years. And I also want to thank Purple. Where's Purple? Because she's been meeting me in Guerinville at a coffee shop, and we've been studying Terence McKenna's book together, The Invisible Landscape. And I don't think I could... have the slight understanding I'm having of it now without her help, so I'm appreciative to her also. And I guess I want to start by telling you a little more about myself. I'm a fiction writer, so I have some books for sale somewhere back there, and also I have a short story in the latest issue of Calyx magazine, and I brought some copies of that too. But I've always had this second fascination with science, but I never felt that I could understand science because I'm not a linear thinker. So I began to study with a man named Brian Swim. I think some of you in the room know about his work. And he had a way of talking about science that helped me be able to understand it. And I realized a lot of what he did was he put things in a context for me. I realized a lot of the science I learned in school didn't have any context. I couldn't place it anywhere in my, in any of my reality. So he kind of opened the door for me to think maybe I could understand science. So I started to write a nonfiction book, and I was trying to explore electromagnetism, because I kept hearing about electromagnetism, and I just didn't know what it was, really. So I started to study electromagnetism, and that led me to Einstein's famous equation, which I never thought I could understand. And so I was reading a lot of books about Einstein and that equation, and I had a dream one night. And in the dream, Einstein said, "Don't forget about time." And I woke up in the middle of the night and I said, "What? What?" Yeah, you know, it's hard enough. I'm trying to understand electromagnetism and E equals MC squared. Now you want me to understand time. And I just didn't think I'd ever be able to do that because I could not understand when people told me time wasn't linear. It just didn't make any sense to me. And then people would say time's an illusion, and that didn't make any sense to me. So I couldn't understand it at all until I heard a YouTube of Terence McKenna talking about time. And he was the first person who explained it in a way that I said, oh, I think I can maybe understand if I read him or read the book he's talking about. So the basis of this talk is based on Terence McKenna's work with time and the I Ching. And a lot of you know who Terence McKenna is? He was this amazing thinker. He also was really into exploring other worlds and other realms, and for him he used a lot of hallucinogens to explore the other worlds, and then he had this insight with the I Ching. So I'll tell you more about him later, but he's someone you might really want to look into if you want to learn more about this after the talk. Okay, so a couple more things before I get started is today is Darwin's birthday, 200th birthday, and Jim had wanted to do a talk on Darwin tonight, and he wanted to trade with me for last Thursday, but I couldn't do last Thursday because my daughter had her 16th birthday. So I think it's very fitting that today is Darwin's birthday because his original name for his theory of evolution, from what I've heard, was transmutation. And I think that fits very well with time. I think evolution's all about time. So it's also Abe Lincoln's 200th birthday, which is really interesting. I had no idea they were contemporaries till today, actually. And Abe Lincoln fits in with the talk because thinking about him, we can really start to try to understand resonance through the layers of history, because I think a lot of people feel a resonance between him and President Obama and the time now and the time when Lincoln became president. So we will, I will ask those three men to be with us here tonight as we journey into time. Okay. I just have these little cutesy animations at the beginning because that's I ran out of time. So, so the first thing I just want to try to elucidate is Einstein's famous equation, E equals mc squared. And finally, one day, I understood that what it means is matter is energy. And I made up this word matter-gy because I don't see why those two things are ever separated. I don't think they should be. I think they're actually one and the same. So I made up the word matter-gy kind of in the vein of the word electromagnetism and words like that. And in this equation, M stands for mass and E is for energy and C is for celeritas. I don't really know how to say that. It's Latin for swiftness, and it's the speed of light. And in this equation, the speed of light is squared, and the speed of light is 670 million miles per hour. So when you square it, you get that enormous number there that I don't really even know how to say. But the reason why I put it up there is because I want you to get an understanding of how much energy is in mass, because that's a really big number, and that's the conversion factor for that equation. And someone I was reading, David Bodanis, he said you should see the equal sign as the tunnel through which this transformation occurs. So energy can become matter, and matter is made of energy. Okay, what is matter? So matter is anything that we think of as solid, anything that takes up space, has a shape and a size. But it's a little bit different than mass, so I just want to make sure I point that out. Matter has three properties, and mass is one of them. Mass is the amount of matter that forms a body, measured by weight. What is energy? I think energy is fundamentally a mystery, a mysterious, I don't even know if you'd call it substance, but that permeates the universe and can manifest in many forms. But I did ask Brian Swim, who's my science person I check in for scientific information, I check in with him, and he described it as a primal substance, an essential mystery. One definition is that it's that which makes things happen. So he says if energy is around, things can happen, and if there's no energy around, nothing is going to happen. So that's a way to think about energy, rather than the definition you'll get if you look it up in the dictionary, which says the capacity to do work, which I didn't really like. So. And here's a quote that helped me kind of try to understand this whole idea and that Terence had in The Invisible Landscape. To overcome the things are located in specific places at specific times conundrum of Western science and the separation of mind from nature, we need to accord matter the same vibratory character that we apply to light and sound. So if we can start to think of matter and energy in the same way we think of light and sound, it might help with that whole concept. So then I just have a couple little slides. The table is energy. The table is matter-gy. And think of the table as light. The granite is energy. Think of the rock as sound moving, a very slow, low sound, because the energy in the rock is moving very slowly. Then we have a tree. And the tree is light and sound. It's also transformed and transforming matter and energy. Oh, I must have a... Here, it's all energy. And there's another little quote to try to help us understand this. If we adopt the vibratory description of matter urged by quantum theory, time becomes the essence of the material. So now we're getting back into the realm of time. The energy that permeates everything, and everything that is energy, can transform itself into different kinds of energy or different kinds of matter, different kinds of matter-gy. And what gives energy and matter its individual characteristics is time. Oh. Uh-oh, what did I do? Oops. I got it. Kind of movie mug. Okay. A unique kind of energy is electromagnetic energy. And that's what I was researching when I was led to time, which now I understand, of course, Einstein was right. Electromagnetism is all about time. And the reason why I say this is that we have all these different kinds of electromagnetism. And we can see visible light in the middle here, and that's light that we can see with our eyes. The rest of electromagnetism is dark. However, what gives each form of electromagnetic energy its characteristic and makes it different from one another is the frequency of the energy. So the time, the pulse of the energy gives it a separate characteristic. Does that make sense? Okay. So here on this end is very, very fast moving electromagnetism, and on the other end is slower moving electromagnetism. And what's interesting to note here is that if you speed something up or slow it down, you can actually change what it is, change its character, change its nature, and transform the matter and energy that it's made of. And that's all happening because of time. So here I'm moving into the idea of circular time. Time is not a line, it's circular. It's a cycle of matter and energy. So if we can start to think of time as cycles, and cycles that repeat themselves, a repetitive cycle that recurs in patterns and rhythms creates time, but it also creates the form of the matter or energy that it's a part of. And as the cycles repeat and kind of nest inside each other, they build complexity. So as these cycles are nested and repetitive, complexity builds up, and complexity is also evolution. You could think Darwin now. So time is the cyclic rhythm of energy and matter. Time is the cycle and rhythm of matter. So time is nested cycles. I got these little this little image off the internet of these nesting dolls that are all different bites. And it's this idea that time is nested inside, the cycles are nested within one another. So cycles are part of larger cycles and contain smaller or shorter cycles within them. Nested cycles create layered, fractal, and resonant time. So to try to help understand this point, I have a little example. So I took this hour of time that we have together as an example. And so it's 60 minutes, let's say, more or less, but let's just say it's 60 minutes that I'm going to be talking. And that's 1 hour, and that's one whole cycle, the 1 hour, the 60 minutes. And then I'm going to break it down into three 20-minute segments, my talk. So within the 60 minutes are going to be three whole cycles, 20 minutes each. And each of these cycles is a complete cycle unto itself. And that's just another illustration to kind of show you that it's still one whole, but it has three cycles within it. Then, within each 20-minute segment, let's say I talk on a certain subject for 5 minutes. So each 20-minute cycle has four fives within that. So are you starting to get this idea of nested time? And this is just another way to illustrate the idea of the 5 minutes, 4 or 5 minutes within one 20-minute cycle as another illustration of nested and layered cycles of time. Then each 5-minute cycle is made up of five 60-second periods, 5 1-minute periods. So within the 5 minutes are 5 ones. And those also are complete cycles unto themselves. So we're back now to this circle of 60 seconds, one whole cycle of time. And this 60 seconds contains other cycles within it, lower than a second. And also it's part of the larger cycles that I just showed you. So now I've got it like this to kind of really show this idea of nested and layered time. So I have the 60 seconds in the middle there within the 5 minutes, and the 5 minutes is within the 20 minutes, which is within the 60 minutes, which is within a 24-hour day. Is everybody getting this? Is this pretty clear? Okay. Now, life works the same way. Life and time are actually, the more I research it, it becomes harder and harder to, well, they're not separate, they're the same thing, basically. But biological life systems work the same way. There's nested systems within nested systems. So a proton is made up of quarks, and atoms are made up of particles. Molecules are made up of atoms. Cells are made up of molecules. Multi-celled creatures are made up of cells. And what the point I want to make with showing you all this nested and layered time and life is that cycles that vibrate at a similar rate or have a similar pulse are resonant with one another. For example, the 60 minutes and the 60 seconds might be a resonant set of cycles. Time becomes more complex as the layers become more dense. So the 24-hour period is more complex than 1 hour. Time is created in this way, transforming matter and energy into future manifestations of itself. So just like this talk, at the end of the talk, the last 5 minutes of my talk will be much more complex than the first 5 minutes of my talk was, because you'll have had all the cycles of time and information that I've given you throughout the talk, which are nested and layered within each other, creating a more complex talk. And it's just like you can't open a novel at page 300 and understand what's going on. You need to start at page 1 and kind of build up into this story, into the complexity of the story. And that's how time works. And what I need to point out here is everything that's transforming here and everything that's nested and layered is energy. It's just energy that keeps getting changed and transformed and layered over and over again. And I have here, what is complexifying and transforming and transmuting and evolving? Energy. So then I have the cycles of life work in the same way. And this is just a further nested cycle from the previous one. So then the multicellular systems are within the ecosystem, are within the planet, are within the galaxy, are within the universe. So that was my introduction into time, that's taking me now to Terence and Dennis McKenna's time in the I Ching work. So I guess if anybody has any questions at the end of this 20-minute cycle, I can take a couple now if anyone has any, or comments.
Just a comment, the definition you gave of energy is the same definition as information.
Oh, really?
Information is that which makes something happen. Yeah.
Really? That's how you would define information? Mm-hmm. That's really interesting. Mm-hmm. Yes?
Yeah, I just, it's really interesting to me how, the linguistics play into these questions, because we're using certain words that identify specific things, but even within my lifetime, those words are changing.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, just as this whole study of energy now, mm-hmm. Just that word energy connotes something different than it did before.
Mm-hmm. It's very true.
So it's very interesting just to kind of watch this landscape, and, I'm thinking here, okay, what does she mean by this word and this word? Yeah.
Yeah, I think that's very true. Yes, ma'am?
Okay, well, I just think it's really interesting how everything's a nested cycle and how it builds complexity, because if you think about civilization over time, it started out really simple with, just when nomads finally settled down and built huts, and it was mostly around hunting and gathering, and now we've built on civilization until we've been able to have technology like the projector. I just think that's really interesting, and you could even think of it as, your day gets more complex.
Exactly. In your life.
I think it's really a cool concept.
Which is a perfect segue into Terence's work, because that's exactly a big part of the conclusion he came to from studying the I Ching is that it was showing this history is also nested cycles and layers of time. And it's definitely getting more complex as we go along. So, we're moving into the McKenna brothers and their work on the invisible landscape. This is the book, Invisible Landscape, where they describe their work with the I Ching. And over there is Terence, and this is his brother Dennis. And Terence is described as an ethnobotanist, a philosopher, a writer, and a psychonaut. And he was local to this area, I think, for quite a while. And he passed in 2000. And his brother Dennis is still alive and well, and he's an ethnopharmacologist now. And both Terence and Dennis were very interested in biochemistry and the biochemistry of the brain and how it matched certain plant substances and how these interactions happening in the brain could change one's perception, which is also, it turns out, all about time. If you change the metabolism of the body and especially the brain, you can perceive things differently because you're transforming energy and matter again. So Terence and Dennis had this question, and they went down to Colombia in the 70s to the Amazon to find a certain plant and try to work with it. And they took several interesting journeys with plant familiars, if that's what you want to call them. And the information that Terence went on to elucidate with the I Ching was derived from this time in the Colombian Amazon. So, the I Ching, are people familiar with the I Ching in this room? I don't really know that much about the I Ching. I only know what I've learned from Terence, but it's an ancient Chinese divination system that is called, it's translated as the Book of Changes. And there's 64 hexagrams that are composed of six lines, and some are broken and some are full. And they're on these little tablets. And you throw these straws, and the configuration they make builds the hexagram, and that's how they use it. But I don't, as I said, I don't know that much about it. I did buy a book here about it that Jim recommended, but I haven't gotten through it yet. it's from China, from the northern reaches of China, and it's actually from an area that's very famous for shamanism. So people believe that this is a pre-Han China divination system, and that it's shamanic. You know, it came from people that were shamans. And it's very old. The first written actual book about it, I think, is 2,000 years old, but they have found markings of the I Ching on a 6,000-year-old sheep bone, shoulder that belonged to a sheep. So what Terence deduced from his research into the I Ching is that the I Ching is to time what the periodic table is to matter. So as, I'm actually going to read this part. The I Ching is translated as the Book of Changes. Interestingly, Terence McKenna decided the I Ching was the Book of Time. Since time is change, this makes perfect sense. Through years of research and mathematical analysis, he deduced that the I Ching is an ancient shamanic understanding of time as made up of discrete units with separate and distinct qualities. Time is made up of discrete units of energy. Therefore, certain times would be more or less auspicious for certain activities. The creators of the I Ching, Terence believed, understood time in the way that Western sciences have come to understand matter. He believes they were that intimate with the different cycles of time and that they actually broke it down into these 64 component parts in the way that we have broken down matter into 104, or I don't know how many there are now, elements. So using a kind of really complicated mathematical equations, Terence took the 64 hexagrams and the six lines, and out of his equations, he devised this time wave. He called it time wave zero. And he took this time wave that he got out of his mathematical calculations using the I Ching, and he put it on the linear timeline of what we call history. Here he's got it from the Big Bang to 2012, December 21st. And he saw that there's certain periods of what he called novelty and habit. So the high points are what he called habit, and the low points are novelty. And that time moves in this way, that it has certain times where it's what he calls habit, which not much new happens. It's kind of hard to make a change. And yet there's other times of novelty where totally new things can come about and anything is possible.
Novelty isn't the top of the chart?
No, novelty's the bottom. Yeah, it's interesting. So his chart...
It's got a smaller number on the bottom.
He calls it time wave zero. His chart bottoms out here on December 21, 2012, which he said is the infinite novelty will happen then. And I'm not exactly sure, to tell you the truth, what all those numbers on the side are. But when he did this chart, he didn't know about the Mayan calendar and the end date of 2012. He came to this conclusion through his own mathematical calculations. And he also... he figured out that time is fractal, and this wave was fractal, so he could spread this wave out, take this fractal and spread it out on different stretches of time and start to see, you know, history lined up that way. And he began to see resonances between certain times, just like we spoke of before. And also, he found that the wave became more complex as it went along. So in other words, in shorter and shorter periods, the whole wave would be completed. And so that time was complexifying in such a way that we would, you know, be living the entire span that was on the previous screen, we would be living it in the whole wave in shorter epochs of time, and that it was I'm losing my train of thought. So the entire fractal of time is getting repeated in smaller and smaller epochs, and so we're moving more quickly through these ups and downs. So in his calculations, he saw an acceleration that also the Mayans have seen in their calculations, and that a lot of people are talking about, how time is accelerating. And he believed it was because, he said the spiral was tightening, and it was because of the complexification, that when things complexify, they start to move faster. And then, this is the 4 years from 2008 and to 2012. And so he believed that 2012 would be the end of a cycle of time, not the end of time, but the end of this cycle of time that we've been living since the Big Bang. And he believed that what would happen was our relationship with time would change, and that there was the possibility that linear time would end, maybe, and that all time would suddenly be present. Or that maybe in 2012 we'd be able to time travel. He had a lot of ideas what might happen in 2012. One of them was that we would merge with technology. Humans would merge with technology, because he very much saw technology in this graph as something that was very much calculated in his the way he would read it and then figure out which year it was. And you can still buy this software program; it's still available, but I don't know if I'd be able to know how to work it. Right there?
Yeah. What is that?
Well, that would show, I guess, from what he says, that that would be a time of novelty, habit, that then takes a really big dip into novelty, which is kind of interesting based on what, what just happened. So that would be that you reached the end of a period of habit and took a really big dip into novelty. Yeah?
Do you know why it is that his calculation stopped in 2012?
It was something about the way he calculates. It's the math and the equation. You know about it?
Well, no. He had an equation.
Right.
Mm-hmm. And I assume that when you did the mathematics, that's just the way it came up.
Right.
It bottoms out at zero.
And he has, I actually have the book on the floor, but he actually puts all his mathematical calculations in the book. I'm not a math person, so it doesn't really mean a lot to me. But if you want to know, Mia, it's right in the book, his equations.
But so the whole thing until 2012 was one cycle that had little cycles in it?
Yes.
So maybe a cycle since the Big Bang would just start over?
It could be.
Really, really big cycle.
A new cycle, yeah. But whenever there's a new cycle, it usually means a huge transformation of energy.
How many years has it been since the Big Bang?
Well, 16 billion? He said 22, yeah. Cosmologists say 16.
Right. Did he tie this to the precession of the equinoxes?
He did.
Did get that, okay.
And I'm going to get to that. I just want to tell you a little. I have this, this acceleration. Acceleration, the tightening spiral of transformations in Matterjee. So just to remind us that what we're talking about here really is transformations in matter and energy, and that the everything that he's showing transforming and on that graph is energy. It's energy that's transforming. And he saw history as what he called an energy event. So, and he also saw, in the math, he saw the acceleration of the time. He said the acceleration is built into physics. And the alignment with the center of the galaxy is kind of what this 2012 date is about, so I'll talk more about that later. But part of how he explains the acceleration is that each acceleration in novelty has preceded more quickly than the one which preceded it. So every time you get into a new phase of novelty, things speed up. I think that's how I understand that. And I don't know if people in this room feel like things are speeding up in general or not. I really feel like they are. So now I am going to let Terrence tell you a little bit himself about his wave, because I think, you know, he explains it very well, and obviously it's his. So I have this.
No, I don't.
He already learned how to time travel.
Probably, I'm sure.
End the show and then go to the slide after this one when you open it again.
Okay, you can help me do that.
You're still learning.
Okay, so now, we'll have to see how this volume is for people, because it's just coming out of this computer.
Resonance, what we discover right down there is the rise of Nazi Germany. Now, saying that Nazi Germany is a resonance of pharaonic Egypt may at first seem counterintuitive until you start thinking about it. And then here's what you come up against. idea of the God-king leader. The word Pharaoh and the word Führer are thought by some people to have a common etymological root. The Egyptians also were the first people to really commit themselves to state-supported massive projects in the domain of tasteless architecture. This was something the Nazis were hugely into, and both used slave labor to build their massive and tasteless architectural constructions, and amazingly enough, both leaned heavily on the Jews for this labor. And yet, separated by thousands of years, operating in different parts of the earth, but curiously connected by this wave generated out of the I Ching. I find this kind of thing very, very interesting. As an example, the day Saddam Hussein invaded Kuwait, I rushed to the computer to check the resonance. Resonance, the birth of Mohammed. Same, same. Couldn't differentiate. So clearly, and so what happened in both cases is that people in a certain part of the world made an enormous surge forward into self-expression, if you want. And the whole Gulf War crisis paralleled the life of Mohammed. And when Mohammed died, the war was over. It was born at the resonance of his birth, and it was completed at the resonance of his death. I find this kind of thing very suggestive and quite uncanny. We are living through, in a 67-year period that stretches from 1945 to 2012, a compressed version of a larger historical epoch, 4,306 years long, that also ends in 2012, so that we have reached, by this reckoning, the late 700s right now. This is what we are living through. And ahead of us lies the Gothic Renaissance, the Renaissance, the European Enlightenment, the discovery of the Newtonian mechanics, the discovery of the new world. That all lies ahead of us. It all has to be compressed into the next 22 years of time. And
oh.
That is what accounts for the crazy quality. That accounts for fads and fashions. You know, hemlines are rising and falling in a rhythm based on the rise and fall of empires millennia ago. And these things are as causally linked as the orbit of the Earth is linked to the Sun, you see. Because we are being drawn toward the attractor through shorter and shorter epochs. And not only must the entire last 4,000 years of history be compressed into this 67-year period from 1945 to 2012, but there is a 384-day period preceding December 22nd, 2012, when the last 67 years and the last 4,300 years have to be compressed into that, then there's a final six-day period when all of these things are compressed again. And so you see what's happening? The spiral is tightening as it goes faster and faster. The resonances are impinging. The thing is getting nuttier and nuttier and nuttier as computers link all cultures together, all informational barriers dissolve, everything is becoming connected to everything else. Not only everything in the present moment, but all past moments as well are being drawn, compressed, squeezed toward the production of the transcendental object at the end of time, which is nothing less than all time, all space, shrunk down to an atomic dimension and handed back to us. Do you see? The way Joyce constructed Ulysses was he had a character who was walking around Dublin in a felt.
Okay, so
that was one sentence.
Yeah, I know.
Do I let him say it?
Has anyone compared this to Callahan's work on the Mayan calendar?
It's very similar to exactly what the Mayans are saying, and people that have researched the Mayans. I'm having trouble understanding the Mayan math, so I found Terrence.
These nested cycles are all coming at this in 2012.
Exactly.
They all come to fruition.
Right.
You know, so it's the same idea.
Mm-hmm. It's the same
there's
idea.
A billion, millions, and thousands, and hundreds, and then the same thing he said.
Exactly.
The last year, and then the last 6 days, and it's all the same.
The same. Yeah. And it was in different parts of the planet that these.
And those step pyramids in the Yucatan are a image of those nested times. If you look at it from above, there it is. Same thing.
Yes, Mia?
So if there's tons of smaller and smaller cycles building up towards 2012, and we have to fit like 22 billion years in it, what's going to happen in the last second?
That's a good question. I don't know. There's, yes?
Do you think that he's saying that Terrence McKenna is saying that cataclysmic things are going to occur, or he's kind of implying that it is the technology that's bringing all these things together that makes it so spiral and fast?
Right.
I don't know what he's saying.
I don't get he doesn't talk about a cataclysm.
Huge events. I mean, if you have to correlate to the Renaissance and the this and the that, those are
right.
Huge.
I mean,
condensed into
I think that, well, he said that, you know, what I said before, that he thinks maybe we'll be able to time, our relationship to time is going to be radically altered. And that this merge with technology would change everything. But he doesn't really talk about a cataclysm or any of that. But I don't know.
I'm using the wrong word. He's implying that major events that are as significant as the Renaissance and you know are going to be condensed into 22 years.
He does say that.
He says that it's through technology that it's going to seem like that. I'm not sure what he's saying.
That the condensed time is resonating with an event like that. So, if the Renaissance shifted culture in a certain way, shifted consciousness in a certain way at that time, so will it shift? That it will have the same impact on the shift of our consciousness in this culture, but in a condensed period of time.
The Renaissance will, or something like it.
Something that will resonate in a Renaissance type way, will shift our consciousness, but in a very much more condensed period of time.
It'll be mm-hmm. Yeah.
I mean, in a strange way, just look at Barack Obama getting elected without anything transitional. He just moved into that space. That had to be the condensation of so much force.
Mm-hmm. That's a good point.
It's just such a smooth insertion.
Right. So it might not be cataclysmic. It might be more like that, like you're saying, this way has been paved by these nested cycles and these resonances that will be similar to these, you know, great events that were happening in history, but not necessarily bad. But I don't know. I'm sure it'll be a shift.
Well, any systems of nature, just looking at any of the ecosystems and the rate at which they are either, you know, we've got everything's accelerating.
Mm-hmm.
Degradation also is accelerating.
Right.
You know, the systems in free fall. That's also. But it's exponentially,
mm-hmm.
you know. So it's everywhere.
It's everywhere.
Yeah.
Yes, in the back.
I like saying that the sense of time is just that sense. I like saying that when you speak a linear sentence, you're older at the end of the sentence than you were at the beginning.
Oh, that's good.
And when you speak a circular sentence, you can actually be younger at the end of the sentence.
Wow.
So you're at least you're moving into a time and space where, well, but our sense of time is very much a function of language.
Mm-hmm.
And that's very true. We very much have linear thought, linear progression in sentences pushed on us in school and in the education system. I remember my first experience with a circular thought. It totally transformed the moment.
Can you say one now?
Well, I can tell you my first circular thought.
Okay.
I'm a writer. It was speak I love you in 10,000 ways without using the words, and the words will speak themselves without using the voice.
Mm.
And I was in this really deep despair at the time, very dense, and just totally transformed.
Well, I think communication is going to be one of the things that we're already seeing that's totally transforming. So what you're saying is true, and also the language is going to be one of the things that's transformed, I believe. The way we communicate is going to be radically transformed, and probably it won't necessarily be linear speech so much as other ways of transmitting information to each other in a way that doesn't need linear time. So I definitely believe that, too. Well, I should move on to the third part, because running out of time. So, this is just, I just really wanted to bring this in here because this is part also of what Terence saw in the I Ching. And he saw the I Ching that it was a lunar calendar. He figured out through the calculations that the math was calculating the rhythms of the moon and the earth and the sun. And this was something that has done, you know, by humans throughout history. This calculating of time by the cycles of the planets and the sun. And that right there is cyclical time. And he said that the shaman were all these the calendar keepers. And in that way, keeping the calendar is a magical act. And if you really understand time, then you can experience timelessness and be a time traveler, which I would say shaman are. So this is a 20,000-year-old bone from Uganda that has these notations marked in it. And a man named Alexander Marshak spent almost his whole life studying and trying to understand what notations and bones that were found throughout the world, what they might mean. And he came to discover that they're recordings of lunar cycles of time. And so it seems almost that humans have been obsessed with this recording of the cycles of time throughout history. And I imagine that like Neolithic and Paleolithic people probably had a much better relationship to time than I do, because they really witnessed these cycles and probably lived their life in relationship to them. And even the thought that if we could go back to a lunar calendar, we would be so much more in touch with the actual cycles of what's going on around us, because the lunar calendar would move with these cycles, whereas the calendar we have now is a linear calendar, and it's the same days every year, so it doesn't ever move and shift with the time as these lunar calendars did. So a lot of people really say, you know, you change the calendar, you change the world. So that's something to think about, too. They say whoever owns the calendar and whoever decides what the calendar is actually running things. So, and we have Stonehenge here, which has been proven to be another ancient lunar calendar. It's now they know that it clocked eclipses and solstices and even the precession of the equinoxes, as this woman pointed out earlier. So again, these people in a very different part of the globe, all really obsessed. I mean, they had to be this had to be really important for them to be building these kinds of monuments and spending all their time and, you know, a lot of time and energy on it. They knew something, I think, that we forgot. And then something closer to home, this is a Parowan Gap petroglyphs, and they're in Utah. And they think, they don't know how old these are. They say maybe 1,000 years old. But this is an enlarged portion of what I just showed you, and it's clearly a notation of the lunar cycle, which is 29 days. So a part of what Terence recognized in this lunar cycle, and I realize that you can't read these little things, I'm going to read them for you, was that it had, again, this fractal and resonant cycle about it. Just like how we saw in the graph how history has these cycles that are resonant through time, this is showing how the 64, the number 64 and 6, which are the 64 hexagrams and the 6 lines, have a resonance not only with the lunar cycle, but with other cycles of celestial bodies, if I can call them that, and celestial cycles that the people that created the I Ching seem to be in touch with. And it's very interesting because he also has another chart that I didn't bring where he takes this 64 number and he reduces it and he goes both ways with it. And it resonates with a lot of different energy patterns that we're all familiar with. So here in the smallest circle, I've got, he's got 64 hexagrams times 6 Yao lines, which are the lines on the I Ching, equals 384. And 13 lunations, 13 moon cycles, is 29.53 days, which times 13 equals 384 also. So the I Ching hexagrams is in complete resonance with the 13 lunations, which would be one complete cycle of moon cycles, like 1 year in the lunar calendar. Then we move up to the bigger circle, and he's got 384 times 64, which is those two numbers again, and it equals 104.25, which is 67 solar years, which matches sunspot cycles, which are also proving to be very important to the Earth and the energy and transformation of energy. I think we're in a sunspot cycle right now. Then on the third circle out, he has 67 solar years times 64, which is 4,306 solar years, which is 2 zodiacal ages. So every 2,000 years, our solar system passes through a sign in the zodiac. So right now that's why they say we're in the age of Aquarius. So this is a fractal coming out of this moon cycle calculation. The zodiacal ages are tied into this mathematically. And then he pulls it out to 4,306 times 6 is 25,836 solar years, which is one complete precession of the equinoxes. And the precession of the equinox is a 26,000-year cycle of the sun passing through the galactic equator, eclipsing the center of the galaxy, which is what many people say is, well, we know it is an astronomical event that's happening now, and especially on the solstice of 2012, our sun is going to eclipse the center of the galaxy. So this was all... he discovered this all through the, you know, mathematical calculations using the I Ching. So this is called the Antikythera mechanism. Does anybody know about this? Mm. And it's been called the first computer. Mm. And it was found in this condition in 1900 on a shipwreck off the island of Antikythera, which is in Greece, and it's been dated to 80 before the Common Era. And when they found it, they had no idea what this thing was. You know, they just pulled it out of this old shipwreck, and it ended up in a museum. And nobody really cared about it till someone finally looked at it and said, "It looks like there's gears, you know, in that." So they took it out of the museum and they started doing all these studies on it. And they found out that this was the what the inside of that mechanism looked like. And it's got 30 interlocking gear wheels, and it clocks lunar cycles, eclipses, orbits of other planets, and even future eclipses. It also has a 4-year cycle on it that the people that are studying it believe may have been the Olympics that they were clocking, but I don't know that that's true. So, and this is what the full reconstruction looks like. Now, I don't know. I've never seen anything else that looks like this from 80 before the Common Era. They've never seen any more. They haven't ever found gears again till the Middle Ages. So some people believe it's from that time period. They say there was record and writings about a computer or this machine that someone had made to record time. And they actually attribute it to Hipparchus, who was the greatest Greek astronomer, and he lived in Rhodes. But the reason why I'm showing you this is because this is from, you know, the Western tradition, which we all, most of us in this room are anyway. And I think looking at this, we can all know and understand that this must have been the height of technology for the time, I would think. And that they spent the height of technology on recording these cycles of time must mean it was really, really important to them. So I just believe that ancient people must have understood something about these cycles and nested cycles of time, and that if they lined up a certain way and the resonance became extreme, it could be synchronistic, which means same time, and possibly you could time travel if you figured out when the cycles were going to be synchronized. That's what I'm starting to believe. I also suspect possibly this may have been left by time travelers because it really doesn't look like that time period to me, but those are just some wild speculations I have when I look at this. So I'm going to end with this idea of the galactic alignment that's coming our way in 2012 and what that might mean and why it might mean something from the point of view of energy, to kind of go back to the beginning of the talk. There's a new theory out. It's called the electric universe. And this theory believes that the main force driving the universe is electricity. Current cosmology believes the main force driving the universe is gravity. This theory says they think that's incorrect, and they think it's electricity. Now, if you go with the gravity theory, you know, the idea of our sun, you know, eclipsing the middle of the Milky Way galaxy, it doesn't seem like it would have any effect because it's so far away, and gravity, you know, it's just too far away for gravity to have an effect. But these people say that in the center of the galaxy, rather than a black hole, is a plasmoid. It's this huge electromagnetic event, and it's shooting off amazing streams of radiation. So, if you believe the electric universe theory, I feel it would make a lot of sense that if our solar system goes through this wave that's kind of coming out of this middle of the galaxy, that it definitely could have an effect on our sun and our solar system. And what it could do is change time, because electromagnetism has been very much tied into, you know, time, especially the body clock. It's known now that it's very much connected to electromagnetic messages. So it's possible that there's a wave coming that has a little bit of a different pulse. And that's what we're feeling already, because it's supposedly it's a 36-year time period to pass by this plasmoid. And that could be what's changing everything and accelerating everything. And again, going back to the beginning of the talk, if you accelerate time, speed things up, you can completely change them. So this may very well be a huge time of transformation for us all in our solar system and on the Earth. And I just think maybe we could try to feel it that way and find a way to move with it. And then maybe it won't be a scary thing, but really exciting. So I think that's enough for now. I was going to take a couple questions. Are we out of time, Jim?
You're not out of time.
Okay.
I'll be happy to.
Okay. So
link into the background.
Okay.
If you have any good questions.
Do you have a bathroom?
You get the key in the back, and it's around, it's outside. Okay, let me get the person in the back, then I'll get to you, okay, Mia? Yes?
Thank you very much. The fear for me is that when this convergence takes place, or as we get nearer to it, that we will throw more complexity towards that moment, rather than collectively being able to step back. Because there is an opening here for spiritual, more spiritualness on a collective basis to deal with this. And I'm hoping that not only in this country, but around the planet, that some people are thinking about it in that way, rather than us really accelerating towards that point and throwing more complexity at it, and the damage that could do to the planet.
Mm-hmm. I think that's a really good point. Yeah. Yes?
I would just like to toss out two comments. One is that there, in all instances of what we call time, is actually a recognition of the relationship of motion between two objects. And time mm-hmm. as a substance, there isn't such a thing.
Mm-hmm.
And the other thing is that in terms of, say, the spread of Buddhism across the planet right now, it's something that's happening, bringing much awareness to many people. But we don't really notice that because we are so inside of it and so close to it that these transformations could all be happening right now. We're in the middle of them. We don't even know that they're going on.
I think they are. Yeah, I think you're right. Mm-hmm. Yes?
Can we rewind a little to your nesting theory?
Mm-hmm.
In your readings, I mean, I get this image of the proverbial pebble in the water that mm-hmm. found out. So in your readings, have you found that as this resonance or cycle, however you describe it, continues, are they building, are the components building on each other? Are they bringing to it individual components as it continues to propel?
I think it's both, probably. Yeah, I think the complexity is building everywhere, but then it's meeting each other. Is that what you mean? I think it's both, I would say.
And is there a scientific or a physics explanation to those components, how they interrelate to each other? Is there a
Yes, it's called systems theory.
Systems theory? Also fields, I would say. Intersecting fields of energy, meeting each other, and at those intersection places, I think information gets transmitted and exchanged in the form of energy. Like someone said earlier, energy is information, or the other way around. So I think that might be part of it. Does that make any sense for what you're asking? Mia?
Well, I just thought it was really interesting when you were saying that the computer thing might have been left by time travelers, because it could be left by us in the future because we found it and then recreated it, and then we could have gone back to try to find the original and left that one there, and then it just would happen over and over, and that could kind of be how time is circular. Because if we eventually time travel, then we could travel all the way around and it would just be a circle.
Mm-hmm.
that mean my Facebook farm is going to be real someday?
I know. I hope so.
Terrence was saying on the time machines of the future, they would need to take his time wave zero because they would need to know when was, you know, at
when
a time
get
of
off?
Not, yeah, time, you don't want to land in habit,
right.
and I think it's an interesting time period that this mechanism was dated to 80 before the Common Era, because I would want to go back to that time period, right, when Alexandria, I mean, what was happening in Alexandria was exactly what's happening now, you know, a merging of cultures and ideas, and then, you know, to try to figure out why, you know, who really was Jesus, you know, that whole thing. I mean, that's a fascinating time to go back to. So that's why I thought, wow, yeah, I would have picked that time period. That makes sense to me that maybe somebody had time traveled to 80 before the Common Era.
Did he bring any reference to Lemuria or Atlantis or even
does he
in his books, like going
I
other
no, I haven't
in
encountered
yeah.
it in him. I don't think I have encountered him, but a lot of the Mayan people that are doing research on the Mayan calendar talk about those times.
There's computers in those times.
Oh, okay. I didn't know that.
Well, Atlantean
oh, that's interesting.
Computers, yeah.
So that would have been time traveling too then, right? Maybe from Atlantis. Anybody else? Oh, Lisa.
I know it's true because I've experienced it. As things get more complex, time seems faster. But it feels also counterintuitive to me. You think as things get more complex, bogged down, like in a bureaucracy,
yeah.
things get slower.
Mm-hmm.
Anything to say about that?
Yeah. That's really interesting.
Anybody have anything to say about that?
Does anybody? Yeah.
Well, if you look at like music, that you take a low note and it vibrates at a certain hertz, and you get the frequencies get higher and higher. You go anywhere from 16 cycles a second to 4,000. You know, and so complexity is also just a speeded up frequency.
Mm-hmm.
So it's not about weight, it's
mm-hmm.
about speed,
right?
And you know, the intervals between things. So it's just compressed space. It's hard to explain, but
no, yeah,
like a tuning fork, you know, it's going
right.
at different frequencies.
But you're saying
complexity
that
higher, faster frequency as opposed to slower.
Well, here's another word, just synchronicity, because also an experience that many of us have is these syncretic experiences where one thing seems to be happening around because of another in a very timely way.
Mm-hmm.
It's just intuitive. So that's one aspect of it, and the other aspect is this incredible, you know, when there's chaos, there are all possibilities.
Right.
Yeah. And that's 2012, I think. So, okay, I'll let Jim close up the talk so we can let them go home.